This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Howdy, good afternoon to you. What's going on? Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network. We're inside the O'Reilly Auto Parts studio. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better prices every day. Lots to do. Dolphins are a mess. Panthers starting to get it going at the right time. And Tiki, I'm trying to determine, even though I already know the answer. Mm-hmm. So it's a rhetorical question, my man. But I am trying to decide for those out there who are taking a different approach than I am. Am I supposed to be impressed by what I saw with the Cavaliers last night? Like, is that supposed to be good?
No.
Is that supposed to be impressive?
You probably were impressed with the New York Knicks.
Yeah, it was a little bit. I mean,
they had a 23-point lead at one point. This, you know, my takeaway from that game last night, and we'll get to the Enes Kanter, LeBron, you know, face-to-face, like they were about ready to kiss.
I love it.
After Ntilikina shoved LeBron. There's something in that we should talk about. But more importantly, we said this yesterday, BT, and I see it more and more every time I watch LeBron. He can only play at a high level in the regular season if there's some drama. If there's something that's just go out and do your job, you know, assist, score. He's got to make himself interested in these games. And early on, we saw it. I mean, we were watching. You're like, the Knicks clearly are the better team. And then all of a sudden, LeBron gets a little bit excited. He gets a little bit of drama thrown into the game. And they all start balling. So it's almost like he's got to find these different catalysts to make himself play. Now it's great on a one-off. But how often can you draw on that? You know what I mean? How often can you just say, I got to create something to get me excited or to get everybody else excited to actually start playing basketball? It's just, I don't know. It's an odd tactic that the Cavaliers are taking so far this season to win basketball games.
As a sports fan, you know, like myself, the more interesting angle is the Knicks. Mm-hmm. Nationally, the more important story is the Cavaliers.
Yeah.
And, you know, let's not forget, back on October 29th, the Knicks went into Quicken Loans Arena, and they destroyed this team.
Yep.
They just smacked them.
Yeah.
And the Knicks weren't playing well to start the season. They had dropped a couple of games. They won 114-95. And then you throw in the controversy. I mean, mini controversy. It's not over the top. It's not, you know, it's not overly egregious. But it was certainly interesting, which I thought it would have had more of an urgency on the part of the Cavaliers last night, because say what you will, not a big deal. Well, I wasn't throwing shade at Ntilikina. I was just trying to illuminate Dennis Smith or taking a shot at Phil Jackson. All that aside, it still created an aura and a buzz that was there. That's usually there at the Garden, but was really there at the Garden last night. And the Cavaliers won by 3 points. They shot 39% from the field, which is terrible. They had 21 turnovers. They had more than the Knicks. They were out-rebounded by the Knicks. Kristaps Porzingis had his least efficient game of the season. They led by as many as 23 points, as Tiki just said. They needed a 43-point fourth quarter to bail them out. And, oh, yeah, by the way, if Kyle Korver, who's 36 years old, doesn't pop in 19 of his 21 in the aforementioned fourth quarter, Cavaliers don't win.
You're right.
So all this urgency, all this story, all this drama, I thought that the Cavaliers would walk in and they would squash the Knicks' soul early. They would snuff them out early. They would dig down deep. Now, you're right. It's hard to do this often for a team that's got heavy legs, older legs, Dwayne Wade, LeBron, we know. I mean, LeBron's still great. Don't get me wrong, but he's got a lot of miles on those wheels. And you look up, and the more interested team, quite frankly, the more interesting team for me was the Knicks. More urgency, more togetherness. I mean, they referenced it on the broadcast, and it was the Knicks broadcast, so maybe this is just what they point out. But I've watched these guys my whole life, and Clyde Frazier's an incredible homer. Mike Breen's not. I mean, Clyde's ridiculous. I love him, but he's the biggest homer in the world. Mike Breen calls it down the way, you know, down the middle, and they pointed out a few times the despondencies, the lethargic tone to the Cavaliers bench, almost like they were accepting of, you know, being brought out to the woodshed and smacked around by a team that was just thrown together a month ago.
Agreed.
And that's a very alarming game for the Cavaliers, even though they won.
It is, but that's the Cavaliers of this season, I think. I don't know how you change that. And again, because it comes down to the athleticism that we talk about, the chemistry that is now lost as they try to inject these new faces, the Dwayne Wade and the Derrick Roses into their lineup. It's just different, right? The Tristan Thompson, the offensive rebounding machine, he's injured. Kevin Love's playing center. It's just different. And I don't think this is anything like LeBron's been through before, because for much of his, I guess, record-setting finals appearance run that he's been on for the last 7 years, it's never been just him. There's always that someone else who's really good, whether it was Kyrie last year or even Dwayne Wade when he was in Miami.
And Bosch.
There's always someone else, right? If he was not feeling it for whatever reason, there's somebody else that could pick up the slack. Now there's nobody, right? There's no other superstar. I mean, Kevin Love, notwithstanding. But there's no superstar that's going to say, I got your back, LeBron, this week. I got you tonight. He has to do it himself. And it's by creating these, I don't know, emotional moments that gets him excited. It gets everybody else jacked up. So after that happens, now everybody's into it, right? The bench, what you're talking about, it has a completely different feel about it. And they come and they play. Just like Kyle Korver you just mentioned. And he knocks down every shot he took in the fourth quarter. You can't say that wasn't because he got jazzed up because of what LeBron did. There's nothing wrong with it.
I guess you can make that connection. I mean, it's hard to deny it. Energy went up, then the Sharks started dropping. I guess there's a correlation, I guess.
13 points in the second quarter.
Now, they looked very lethargic.
13.
But listen, if Porzingis would have had... Now, Porzingis is second in the NBA in scoring.
If Porzingis has his day, it's over.
That's what I'm saying. That I just rifled through five or six things that jumped out to me. The shooting percentage, the rebounding margin, the 23-point deficit, all the things that I got into. I think what's probably most disconcerting from a Cavaliers point of view is that it wasn't even like Porzingis was vintage. He was bad. Yeah. I mean, he really missed. He shot 7 for 21.
Yeah.
That's not good.
No.
For a guy who's incredibly efficient and really incredibly dominant so far. So you look at the numbers, I don't know. LeBron, even the play with Jared Jack when he flexed, it was a nice play and he got the N1, he plowed through. But it's Jared Jack. Weigh him by 50 pounds. You're supposed to plow through him. You had a chance to ice the game. You missed two free throws. You got lucky because the ball came right back to you because you clanked it so hard it had no choice but to ricochet back 15 feet. I don't know. Before you know it, it's going to be December. And before you know it, it's going to be January. And those minutes are going to pile up. And I don't know that reservoir, that ability to dig deep into his bag of motivation. I wonder how many different versions remain.
Yeah.
Well, here's the still thing. The Knicks. While the Knicks are a nice story,
I agree.
It's still the Knicks. That was very much in their infancy.
And that's the point I was going to make.
I mean, they needed everything
to win that game. This was the, a Western Conference power.
Or the Celtics, even.
Yeah, or the Rockets, who they played.
The Rockets, or even the Raptors at home. Or, just the Wizards at home, if they're playing well.
It's still the Knicks. Now, the Knicks have turned the corner, it seems, because of you hate to say this, what Phil Jackson built, the Knicks feel like they're on the right path.
It's funny. I say that they're there because Melo's gone.
And I think you're right, but
I think actually both could be right.
It's a little bit of both.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the history of Phil Jackson in New York is, I don't know, it's emotional, it's negative, it's ultimately a waste of a lot of resources and time, but probably positive when it's all said and done because of who he brought back. I mean, remember, he got rid of Tim Hardaway. He went and learned a little bit down in Atlanta.
Yeah.
He comes back. He's actually balling.
Also paid $17 million above what the Hawks were going to pay. But that I was okay with that when they brought him back. Tim Hardaway's a pretty good player.
I remember you said that. Huh? And I didn't think it because I remember Tim when he was here the first time. Nice player, nice guy. But I didn't think he was going to be, this kind of, scoring 28 points last night.
I don't know. He scored 34 when they beat the Cavaliers on October 20, 32 or 34.
You're right.
Late October.
So
he's a different player.
This Knicks team feels like okay, this was the idea that Phil Jackson had, even though
yeah, but here's the
he
thing.
Messed it up, and but, it probably yeah, wasn't his idea.
Personnel-wise, it is, but they're not playing the triangle.
Oh, of course not.
So even if they had Porzingis and Ntilikina and Cantor, and they were able to do, and Phil was still here, he'd still be stuffing the triangle on some level down Hornacek's throat, and I think you'd still have an element of dysfunction because mm-hmm. the message would be diluted yeah. because when Hornacek says one thing, you know, you got Big Chief Triangle staring at, you know, in the corner of the gym, kind of watching what the Knicks try to do. It's very interesting because, yeah, I mean, Phil Jackson's long gone, although LeBron keeps taking shots.
Yeah.
He's gone, but he's going to have a real complex legacy here because Porzingis is going to go on, if he stays healthy, mm-hmm. with his skill set. He's going to win a few MVPs. Yeah. He's going to win an MVP or two. He's going to be that kind of player.
How much credit, and he drafted when him. Success happens, whether later this year or next year, how much of the credit you think goes to Phil Jackson? Or well, are we still in the blame game for Phil Jackson?
I've eased off. I think a lot of it is about, at this point now, player development, mm-hmm. which means Phil's out of the equation. I'm not really judging Phil anymore. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I hear you.
Because gone.
So that opens the door to give him credit for at least getting the guys in the door.
I have no problem doing that. No. I'm in the business of being fair. My biggest quandary with Phil was he was so detached from the job.
Yeah.
You know, in a city, whether it's, you know, even if it was Boston or Philly, certainly L.A., Chicago, certain markets you just can't be invisible in.
Yeah.
And Phil Jackson, he the only time he would interact with anybody was some, you know, tweet that nobody really understood.
Mm-hmm.
Or if he was, you know, taking a dig at Steph Curry.
Yeah. Or Carmelo.
Now, you could say, well, hey, listen, this is what he envisioned. He wanted to get rid of Carmelo, but he also was dumb enough to give him a no-trade clause,
yeah.
and he also gave him the extension a couple of years ago, which a lot of people thought he should not have, including me. So it's really it's like he does something well, then it's offset.
Yeah.
He does something terrible, then it's actually offset because he does something well.
He's got a very complicated legacy, especially in New York. I mean, I think in
Well, I don't think it's complicated anywhere else.
Across the well, I think so because of all the negativity. That came out.
I think he's the best coach of all time.
Well, that is not.
So, how is that unclear? How is that complicated?
I'm talking about it as an executive. You know, he's the greatest
as an exec.
Coach,
well, he was only executive for the Knicks.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
And so, what did his legacy in New York? What's his legacy in New York going to mean for his total legacy? Right. And so we look at it and we want to. Some people tried to knock down who he was because of what he was doing in New York, but it's like, yeah, but it's two different worlds, right? It's
two different skill sets.
Two different people, really. Mm-hmm. You know, who he was as a coach was completely different than who he seemingly was as an executive. And to me, his biggest failure, and you mentioned it, BT, was he didn't communicate, right? And especially in New York, you got to be not fully transparent, but you can't be obscure.
No, he's pompous.
Yeah.
He was pompous.
He was pompous and obscure. Yep. Like, you're not even dignified enough to get a response from me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's condescending.
Very condescending. And people just get turned off from
mm-hmm.
that. Now, the result, as we're starting to see now, probably was a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
But he couldn't sustain it here in New York, despite ownership saying, yeah, we're going to honor his contract through 2020, whatever it was. And then a couple months later, they ended up firing him.
He also gave Noah a ridiculous contract. Mm-hmm. He's got three more years to go with big money. It really is. Boy, it's all over the map, boy. I mean, it's like the most volatile week in the stock market. Up, down. I mean, the apex, Porzingis, mm-hmm. the low point, you know, Noah who looks shot.
Yeah.
Or, you know, going through Derek Fisher as a coach, you know, like that.
Less than 2 years.
It's crazy. I mean, it really is an odd tenure. But he's gone. But it's funny, he's gone, but man, his roots they're just planted. So mm-hmm. he's going to be a part of the equation, even if Knicks fans don't want to embrace that.
Yeah.
Really, maybe for the next 15 years.
Right.
If Porzingis stays healthy, and same with Frank.
You're right.
I want to get into more, though, on the Cavs aspect a little bit coming up here. You know, I think it's a real, you know, I expressed this to start. I just very disconcerting. A little window dressing. You know, mm-hmm. now LeBron, you see on Instagram, he's snapping pictures himself at midcourt with the Knicks logo. Like, I don't know if LeBron's got the horses to follow him out of the stable this year. That's the first time. And you made that point before, and you're right.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, back in Miami, if he was having a rough night, Bosh could get you 25 or 30. You know, D. Wade could certainly do that. Last year, all right, you know what? He's got a couple of fouls where he's tied or he's taking the night off. Kyrie, go get 30. Go take over. Go beat this double team and make it easy for everybody else. they don't have anybody on the team that could do this year. Mm-hmm. This year, and the more I said 3 weeks ago, I don't think Ty Lue makes it through the season. I'll stand by that. I don't see how this team makes it out of the Eastern Conference.
Yeah,
I don't.
It's going to be tough.
I don't see it.
It's middle of the road right now in the Eastern Conference for them. This is to get to the postseason, and then once they get there, who knows who they end up getting matched up against? God forbid they're like fifth and have to take on Boston.
And yeah, with a home court advantage, I'm with you. All right, 1-855-212-4227. We'll get some calls on that. I personally thought the NBA game was a lot more interesting than the football game, which we'll get to. I know you watch both, so did I. The first half was an absolute snooze fest, and we got a little late. By the way, we got the over. We did get the over, so we gave you that. So we went 3-3 on the weekend.
Thanks, Jay Cutler.
Yeah, thank you, Jay. You know, are we buying the Panthers? I mean, they got a lot of wins at this point. I know that there's a lot of but I don't know, but you know, commas, dot dot dots. They got a lot of wins. They got a lot of wins. So we'll certainly get into them as well on a busy Tuesday. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. All right, everybody, Brandon Tierney here to tell you about my friends over at Relief Factor and why Relief Factor is not just for former pro athletes or anybody. Just listen, you just want to get rid of pain, get yourself going, get off the couch and get active again. Yep, athletes, anybody with a neck pain or shoulder, back, hip, knee, whatever it is, foot pain, hand pain, or general muscles and aches, and this goes away. I wake up, I take it every single day. I feel pretty good about it. Just $20 a month. It's dirt cheap. Let's be honest. $20 a month. It's like 3 or 4 cups of coffee at some of these trendy spots. It's ridiculous. And it's worth it. Give them a buzz. 800-500-8384. That's 1-800-500-8384. And I'm telling you, it's 100% drug-free. That's a great thing. And almost 80% of the people who actually order Relief Factor, and they give it a 3-week try, and they go back and they give another 3-week try because it works. Listen, it's not a miracle. So if you need surgery for something, God forbid, I'm not saying it's going to cure that. But if you wake up and you've got the tight groin or the tight hammies, the strains, the aches, just normal everyday occurrences, give it a shot. You know, it's phenomenal. I mean, it really does work. ReliefFactor.com. That's ReliefFactor.com. Howdy, welcome back to Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio and CBS Sports Network, 23 minutes past the hour. By the way, why was LeBron, what was that whole deal with Neil Aquino? Like, why was he doing that?
I think he just wanted to intimidate him.
But why?
Because he's LeBron. And he wanted to.
He doesn't do that too often.
He never does.
One thing he doesn't do.
Never does it. He's always he's always about his business.
Yeah, he is. But he's not dirty. He's not an instigator. You know, doesn't really show off too much. You know.
And on the broadcast, they didn't reference anything that maybe had happened before.
Mm-hmm.
So it was purely instigated by LeBron. Again, that could be because, as we talk about, he's always looking for drama. But I mean, your thought on Until Aquina actually responding to it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if he was an American, meaning he played basketball in the States, grew up revering LeBron James, I'm sure he knows who LeBron James is and probably a fan. But if you grew up in the States and you're a basketball player, LeBron's like the man. Like you,
I think he's the man everywhere, man.
I agree.
Where the hell you grew up in Australia, LeBron's
the man.
But
hold on. If you're a 19-year-old kid from wherever, let's say South Florida, and you went to somewhere for a year, you went one and done to Kentucky, and you come into the league, and LeBron, I don't know, maybe gets in your face. What are you doing? I don't think many kids would do that. 19-year-old kids are going to push back at LeBron.
Depends on the kid. I mean, Iverson, toyed with MJ, purposely sought him out and crossed him over.
Yeah,
and,
but AI
and,
thought he was better than everyone.
Well, but I think it depends on the person.
That's what I mean.
What I like about
Aquina doesn't seem like he's that
he
kind
doesn't,
of kid.
But he, because he's got, but I like that. Some people are, demonstrably tough or motivated or driven. Others are quietly fierce, and he might have that kind of DNA, and I think that's a really good thing for the Knicks here, but how about Kanter? Kanter's a guy. I want to play this for you. Enes Kanter after the game, still, I mean, he kept it going a little bit here. A nice little back and forth, and then LeBron responded. Here's Enes Kanter.
Yeah,
you don't hear that too much in the NBA anymore. I love it.
Kanter is, I mean, he's new to the Knicks.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even like his team or his home. I mean, you can chalk it up to them changing the culture, but then quotes the culture of the Knicks by being tough guys all over again. It just feels weird coming from Enes Kanter. I mean, we had him in here, obviously, for a serious issue.
Yeah.
With his homeland, where they kind of basically were trying to bring him back and make him disappear.
He was worried about his family.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Was, yeah. But, I mean, I don't, he doesn't seem like that kind of tough guy.
Well, I think, you know what it is? He's a different kind of tough. I think when you grow up with such inner turmoil, anarchy within your home country, I don't think, you know, possibly throwing down with LeBron James, I don't think you're too scared.
Yeah,
I mean,
true,
bullets flying a little different than fist flying.
True.
And I really think that's what it comes down to.
Yeah. You know, LeBron.
You know, like real world strife versus schoolyard beef. You know, what's going to really scare you?
Yeah. What did LeBron James have to say about his comments?
He had a great line. Yeah. Listen, he had a great line. He didn't miss a beat. Here it is. You know what I think this, I'm going to tap into LeBron's mind for a moment and play a little amateur psychologist here. Mm-hmm. I don't even know that he knows that he's doing this, but I think what he's doing is an attempt to deflect that he's just not quite the same. Teague, we could all flip on SportsCenter and watch him drill that three in KP's mug, start flexing. Yeah, I know they won the game. I've watched him a lot this year. You know, I'm talking first quarter stuff, second quarter stuff, road games, NBA TV, League Pass. I know he's still great.
Mm-hmm.
But on his scoreboard, you know, how we measure him, he just physically, athletically is not the same.
Yeah, of course.
And I think that he knows it somewhere.
Yeah,
somewhere deep in the deepest recesses of his mind, he knows it.
How many seasons is this?
It's 15.
15? I mean, 15 seasons in the NBA. I know he started as a young man, but still.
He's probably played about 18 or 19 if you look at all the playoff
You're
games
right.
and the international competition.
Without a doubt, because the Olympics and going to the finals for the last 7 years, that's not counting the early ones with the Cleveland Cavaliers. I mean, he's been it's a lot of basketball he's played. So, I mean, you should expect that. And at some point, every great who gets old changes his game in some ways, even if it's not his physical game, but it's his trash talk game. And that's what he's doing. He's trying to find ways to make himself engaged or excitable or have that fire. Because when you're young, the fire is easy, right? You're physically, you're just superior, right? If I want to dunk on you, you can be standing right there, but I'm still going over you or around you or whatever it's going to be. But as you get old, you can't do that anymore, right? At least not consistently. And so you need something else to get your blood boiling. And so, I mean, as I see LeBron now, it's all about talking himself into making things interesting, at least until he gets to the postseason. And that's when superhuman LeBron takes over. But we're nowhere near that right now.
How come football players don't seem to do that?
Because you get hit once and you get pissed. You know what I mean? It's one shot and you're mad.
Yeah.
There's no physical. I mean, basketball is a physical sport, but it's not like football.
No.
Right? You're not getting cheap shot, running a crossing route, and you're not even quarterbacks looking the other way.
Mm-hmm.
Linebacker comes and ear holes you. Nobody sees it. Nobody calls it. Refs don't care.
Mm-hmm.
You get pissed.
But you know
what I mean?
No, I got you. But, like, we won't even use Brady because he's not even human at this point. But I feel like
he's a technician, though. Brady is the he's hard to use the example
because he's
like Peyton. And he was so prepared. It was scientific. It was like clinical.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? This is what I'm going to do. When we have success, then you're going to see a celebration. But until that, it's all clinical.
Yeah.
Right? It's just different. It's harder to judge, you know, the emotional ups and downs of quarterback, at least really great quarterbacks, because there's no emotion.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And it's also once a week, so you can really ratchet it up. And it's, you know, we're not. It's a little different in this sense in the NBA as well. The shoot-around and the morning shoot-arounds, you have more access. Mm-hmm. Like, we hear more from these guys.
Good point.
Like, it seems like football players, they're sheltered until game day and then the press conference right after the game, and we don't really see it till the next game.
You're right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Maybe you do a local radio hit and
locally,
pretty much say nothing for the most part, you know?
Locally, you'll hear it. And if guys show up for the one media availability that they have a week, maybe you get something, but usually not
because
it's a Wednesday. And what are they actually saying? They're not talking about the previous game. They're too far away from the coming game, and there's no sound bite. There's like nothing to make it interesting. And guys are so conditioned not to put billboard material out there. They're not going to trash talk in the middle of the week.
It's a big advantage for the NBA.
Yes,
you know, it's funny.
Right.
There's 82 games, and you know, in large part, 25 or 30 of them don't mean much because when you get to that point in the season, yeah, the standings, maybe, you know, one or two spots, flip them here and there.
Yep.
For the most part, the pecking order is established. You know the royalty of the NBA and who's not. But, it you know, there's a recurring narrative that I think is far more interesting than the NFL because of the frequency. You know, and then like just even Charles and Kenny getting up on, yep. on you know on TNT after it just seems like more soap opera-ish.
Yes,
and it plays.
Yes,
yeah, it plays well You're for right. me. I enjoy it. All right, Teague, we will get into the Panthers coming up next year. You know, we were going through the determination yesterday and the process. Well, do we buy the Saints? And our answer obviously is yes. While I think we are both reluctant to put the Panthers on that level fully, do we need to reevaluate how we view them?
A little bit, because I think something changed this week.
Oh,
and
okay.
it showed up in this game.
All right, we'll get to it after Jay's update. Jay Berman coming at you right now, Big Dog Jay. All righty, Teague and Tierney is brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. When it's time to replace your battery, trust the professional parts people at O'Reilly to help you choose a superstar battery that's a perfect fit for your vehicle. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Let's get to the NFL, Teague. And, you know, yesterday, if you recall, we were discussing the, you know, if we had to start constructing a list, top teams in each conference, general consensus in the AFC, Pats, Chiefs, Steelers, Jaguars starting to get some run and some respect now.
Yep.
Primarily because of their defense. And when we got to the NFC, you know, certainly gave props to the Saints.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously acknowledged the Eagles as the team to beat right now.
Division leaders.
Yep. Keep an eye on Dallas if Zeke ever comes back and Smith gets healthy at left tackle. Without those guys, they're a different team. The Rams, for sure. We didn't even mention Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't. They certainly didn't expound on them.
No.
Didn't even mention them.
Yeah.
Do we need to start throwing them into the conversation?
I think we do, especially after watching last night's destruction of the Miami Dolphins. Some of that at the hands of Jay Cutler making an ill-timed corner route to a tight end that was undercut by Luke Kuechly, which helped me be assured that BT was going to get his over because at halftime it was going to be 10-3. I was going to be a little bit nervous for you, BT, but they went and scored, made it get 17-3 heading into halftime.
Plenty of breathing room.
And then they took off, right? And so, you know, when you say I think something changed midway through this season. Now, we obviously remember the whole shoulder injury with Cam. He didn't throw all season long. Hell, he wasn't even practicing for much of the early part of the season. So he was getting in game shape as the season was going on, which is hard to do, especially for a quarterback.
Yep.
Well, John Gruden said this last night on the broadcast, and if you caught it, I think it's happened in the first half, I believe, maybe the second quarter. I can't remember when he exactly said it, but it was a precursor for what was coming in the second half. He said basically Cam talked to his coaching staff, whether it was Ron Rivera or his offensive coordinator, and said, you have to let me be me, and that means let him run the rock, right? If he sees openings, give him free rein to take off. Call design draws, right? Put to the tight end and the running back out into the formation to block, not necessarily to go on the pass routes, and let me just tote it. And as a result, he had 95 yards on 5 carries and some serious game-changing or field position-changing plays, and it felt like Cam Newton again. And so with his health, his increased health, and his desire and the team's desire to let him use his legs, this Carolina team feels like the Carolina team that we saw a couple of years ago. Now, you couple that in with, you know, their run game was fantastic, both with Christian McCaffrey and Jonathan Stewart. And so it just felt like the old Carolina Panthers last night, which then makes you go look.
Or was this more about the Dolphins, who were atrocious?
Well, their defense has been great.
They just lost 40-0 to the Ravens.
Agreed, but until last week, 2 weeks ago against the Ravens, their defense was top 5 or 6 in the National
Football
League.
But we see, just like the Bills, I mean, when things flip, they flip
fast. And
it flipped
quick. Now
the NFL,
the difference with the Dolphins is there wasn't a specific move that you could point to, right?
Yeah.
The Bills got rid of Marcell Dareus, and so the core middle part of their front four on defense just was lost. There was nothing to explain that with the Dolphins. But regardless of the Dolphins or who the Carolina Panthers were playing, it made me go back and look at their schedule, right? Because we feel like they've been underachieving. But their only losses have been, one, to the Saints. This is before we knew how good the Saints were. That was the beginning.
That was week three.
That was the beginning of the Saints' 7-game run.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been dominant since that game early on in the season.
And they
season.
Got beat up pretty good. I think it was 34-13.
34-13. And then they lost to the Philadelphia Eagles.
Couple of points, tight.
Yep. Again, tight game, but week 5 or 6, we knew the Philly was good. We didn't know how good they actually are.
True.
Right? So we didn't give them enough credit for losing those games well.
That's fair.
And then they played terrible.
So how are we going to explain this Bears one?
Well, you can't.
But they scored three points.
This was the anomaly. I think they scored 3 points.
Yeah.
But the Bears only scored 3 points, too, by the way.
Yeah, that's true.
It was
the,
all,
fun, the
was
lateral
all,
to
what was the kid's name? I wrote it down. Eddie Jackson.
And Samuels, too.
Yes, yes. Well,
on the lateral.
No, Eddie Jackson was the defender.
Yes.
The rookie DB for the Bears who picked up Curtis Samuels' fumble and tipped Kelvin Benjamin's tip pass and returned them both for touchdowns. Those were the only touchdowns that the Bears scored. So,
yep.
Knocked that one away because it was just what?
Just one of those days?
One of those days.
Just
they,
one of those
they,
days.
They played
huh?
terrible. Cam was bad. He threw a late interception. It was horrible. But just tossed that one up to a bad, bad day. Other than that, they've won every other game. Now, they're supposed to win these games. They beat San Francisco. They beat the Bills. They beat New England. That's not one that we thought they were going to win.
No.
But they found a way to do that in week four, and that was after the New England Patriots had turned it around. They beat Detroit. In Detroit, by the way.
Yeah,
they
Detroit's
beat. I agree. But it's still Detroit. Detroit's not one of the bottom.
It's funny. Beaters. Every year we do this radio show, like we have to like raise our voice like with an inflection when we say Detroit.
They're not bottom
the
feeders.
Lions.
They beat Tampa in Tampa, in division rival,
okay.
And they beat Atlanta, and now they beat Miami.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some decent wins on the schedule. So of course you have to start saying, man, at 7-3, they're in the driver's seat for the wild card, right? I mean, I think the Saints, you can give the division early right now. I mean, we'll see what happens as the next couple of games play out and we get into December, but it feels like the Saints are on a roll just because of how well they're playing defensively and how good their running game is, and they haven't even had to tap into Drew Brees being, you know, superhuman yet. So I'm going to – right now I'm saying the division is the Saints, but the Carolina Panthers are in the catbird seat for the wild card right now. And when you look at their remaining schedule, they're at the Jets, they're at New Orleans, which obviously is going to be a tough game, Minnesota at home, Green Bay at home, which, you know, they should win, Tampa, which by that point, which is week 16, Tampa's, you know, should be maybe cashed in. Who knows? We'll see. And then at Atlanta to finish the season. So they have a good shot of going 10-6, 11-5 if they can steal one of these. So, yeah, Carolina's a team we overlooked yesterday by saying they're one of the viable options in the NFC.
I'm less convinced.
Why?
I don't know. I want to lean on the aesthetics? So, I mean, that's dangerous because in the NFL, you take a win, every week's a little different. What's flying around our studio? What was that? Was that a little...
Something floating around.
I saw you blowing that out of your face. Yeah, it is a dangerous game to play. And then conversely, sometimes we attach too much value to a quote-unquote pretty win.
Yes.
I get it. I don't want to necessarily do that. It does help. Greg Olsen's coming back.
Yeah, you're right.
Greg Olsen's coming back.
Second straight game with 200 yards rushing. I mean, you're running the ball. They're still an elite defense.
Funchess has made plays. Mm-hmm. That's why they got rid of Benjamin, part of the reason.
Two touchdowns last night, Funchess had, to your point.
Their defense is pretty good. I mean, Rivera's got a good sense of who they are.
Mm-hmm.
Cam looks healthy. Cam's getting back to doing what Cam does. There's a lot of things that should encourage me more. I'm just a little reluctant to do it.
Who do they need to? Obviously, not the Jets. Maybe New Orleans. Maybe going to New Orleans.
Be nice,
because they got blown out at home by New Orleans. That was early in the. Obviously, we just mentioned it in week three. Maybe if they go to New Orleans, maybe not even win, because we know where New Orleans is right now. But if they go to New Orleans and fight and give them a game, or even win,
and the Vikings game after that,
The Vikings after
that's gonna be tough.
Well, I mean, I'm not worried about the Vikings, but the fact that they haven't that they're deciding between Case Keenum and Teddy Bridgewater right now.
You think they're just saying that to placate or be kind to Teddy?
Why?
Because there's no decision to be made.
Agreed.
Here. Case Keenum deserves to play
without a doubt.
He does,
but it just gives me a tad bit of pause,
like maybe a little fracture, a little division,
fracture. Just it's unnecessary.
Yeah.
It's unnecessary to make it a decision. Case Keenum deserves to be the starter.
Yep.
For this Minnesota Vikings team.
Yep.
So the fact that they're even flirting with putting Teddy Bridgewater back in after being on the shelf for a year plus.
Yep.
It's creating something odd in my mind.
Like, okay.
Why are you doing that? So,
but yes. I don't see Carolina scoring a lot of points on the Vikes.
I don't either.
You know?
But if they switch to Teddy Bridgewater, then I like Case Keenum better than Teddy Bridgewater at this point as the quarterback of the Minnesota Vikings.
So do I.
Maybe not long term, but
no, so
certainly
I.
Right now.
I'm with you.
So,
you know, Carolina's a little mystifying. I'm also turned off by the way Cam's handled his business this year.
Yeah, of course. of course.
This thing's going to annoy us the rest of the show. I don't know. How did this bug get in here?
I don't know.
But it's flying around the studio.
It's not even flying fast. It's
no,
going
it's
really
not.
Slow.
And I still missed it.
I know.
Although when I went to grab it, it actually showed a little burst.
It did.
Probably timed that well at the fly combine. probably flew a 4.40 wing flap in the 40 combine at the for the flies. I think this is one that you and I are going to be a little opposed on the rest of the way.
Mm-hmm.
You lay out a good argument. Don't get me wrong, and they're certainly competitive and they're certainly viable. I'm just trying to distinguish between
what's
Super
real,
Bowl
what's
viable.
Not,
yeah, yeah. I just feel like they're a second tier NFC team. And I have no problem saying that. Panther fans can get on me. I don't know. I just I don't know what their upside is. Like, yeah. Do you think that they could actually get a lot better?
Yeah, because Greg Olsen comes back, right? But here's the thing. I mean, he hasn't played all season.
Yeah, but he's like Witten. He knows the playbook.
True.
Just get him by the sticks.
True.
10-yard outs.
There is,
let him ease in.
But
he'll be fine.
But what made him so good? He was the Panthers' deep threat. He was the long ball guy.
He was the main guy
for a lot of.
I had to take again for a minute, but yeah,
well,
you're right.
You know,
no, you're
I mean,
right.
Like
you're
the,
right.
The intermediate yep. to long ball guy, it was obviously Ted Ginn because he just stretched the field. But 80% of the time, Ted Ginn was a decoy.
Mm-hmm.
Every now and then, you toss it up to him and he'd score a touchdown.
Sure.
But he was the decoy. He was clearing out space for Greg Olsen going down the middle of the field. Now, if he can't do those things, I think it changes a little bit the dynamic of getting Greg Olsen back. Now, I believe he'll be fine, but he just hasn't played all year,
mm-hmm.
right? He got banged up, in week two?
It felt like it was a little later in week two, but I think it was, I'm going to say three or four.
Yeah.
It may have been two. I mean, I could be off on that.
But he's missed a good portion of the season.
He has.
He is coming back, and
yep.
that's a good thing.
He's coming. He's working out before the game last night.
Anytime you get a weapon back, it's positive, especially when you're starting to figure out how to use all of this talent that you had. Christian McCaffrey, Jonathan Stewart, and now Cam with his legs to go
mm-hmm.
with whatever he does in the passing game. I think it's something you can't ignore, especially when your defense is sound.
Let's hear from the head coach. Ron Rivera is never thrust into that conversation of elite coaches, and I don't think he should be there. But Ron seems to get mm-hmm. a lot out of his teams. I don't know that this team is dripping with talent. Here's Ron Rivera on Cam Newton performing and getting it done on the big stage. Here's the head coach. Tiga, I was just thinking about this, and maybe this is something I'm going to have to resolve internally here, wage a little battle amongst myself here, I might have to change this here, okay? Maybe part of the reason why I'm not giving the Panthers a whole lot of props, right, or the love that you are, is I had this preconceived notion. I was married to so many other stories in the NFC,
mm-hmm.
one being the New York Giants.
Yep.
Certainly thought Dallas would be not great, but
You're talking about married to good.
Good stuff.
Yeah, good stuff.
Big picture, the Packers, obviously, yeah. before Rodgers gets hurt.
Yep, we both had them going to the Super Bowl.
Yep, and we both like the Vikings as well. I really thought Tampa would be a lot better mm-hmm. this year. I was all in on Tampa. I thought Atlanta. I didn't think that they would have this drop-off just because they lost the coordinator. Maybe a week or two for the hangover, but eventually get it right. They're still not clicking.
Mm-hmm.
Thought Seattle would be better or at least, well, they're good, but now with all the injuries now they're. So all these other teams that I kind of put in front of Carolina before the start of the season, maybe I'm having a rough time reconciling midseason.
Yeah, bringing them back.
That it's really changed a lot,
yeah.
and I've got to hit the recalibration button.
Well, I mean,
I don't know.
We
not saying I'm prepared to do it fully, but I might have to think about this.
We mentioned this, though, briefly, but the NFC is really compelling this year. The AFC, not so much, because there's so many teams that you look at and like, yeah, they're not real. Right, they're not beating anybody.
You're not intrigued by the Jaguars?
I am, very.
I'm so intrigued by the Jaguars.
Last week,
Brady, the Steelers, the Jaguars, the Chiefs.
Well, intrigued by the Steelers because I feel they're underperforming. I mean, it's crazy. They're 7-2,
uh-huh.
but I feel like they're underperforming. They beat
they were down 17-3 to the Colts.
Exactly.
A couple of minutes in the third quarter, 61-yard bomb.
They won that game. They didn't lead in that game until they won that game,
mm-hmm.
which is nuts.
Mm-hmm.
With zero time left on the clock.
Same with the Jaguars for the most part.
Same with the Jaguars.
I mean,
same thing.
They were getting pushed around a little
bit. And a lot of it was because Blake Bortles started, and this is back to the Jaguars,
uh-huh.
Blake Bortles started giving that game away, trying to just a couple interceptions, and fortunately their defense is stout. So, I mean, I want to like the Jaguars. I just don't like Blake Bortles.
You know what it is, too? No, I hear you, man. I get you on Blake. I think part of the issue in how we perceive the AFC
mm-hmm.
is that, if the Raiders are sitting here at 7-2 or 6-3 and hanging 35 and 38
yeah.
on people on a weekly basis, and the Broncos defense / team didn't implode,
yeah.
really the way the AFC West has kind of gone below what we thought, it's changed the entire perception of the conference because that Good was point. Thought to be the best division in football.
You're right.
And it's not.
The West.
Yes. The West. Yes. It's yes. not.
I mean, I thought the Chargers would be much better. Obviously, I thought the Broncos would be right there, regardless of who was at quarterback. Mm-hmm. They're not. You know what I mean?
The Texans, totally.
The Texans are, I mean, they're sitting at 3-6. They have no quarterback. Tom Savage is going to lead the way, or T.J. Yates. I mean, you're right.
Yeah, we'll see you next year, Houston. Yeah. That's what that equates to.
There's just a lot of teams that we thought were going to be there that are nowhere close.
Teague, we got to get into the concussion protocol. NFL is trying to fix this, and they're having a rough time doing it.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.